Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 748. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Anthony Jeselnik, Thoughts and Prayers, a Netflix comedy special, now streaming only on Netflix. I cannot tell you, Kyle, how excited I am that all of our comedy pals have specials coming out.
It's amazing.
It is a golden age of comedy specials.
Netflix is killing it with like the curation they've done for all this stuff. There's so many good specials on there.
And it's such a good platform for stand-up because it's, you know, everything's front and center when you see it. And
oh, for sure.
And so I am very excited for Jeselnik's special, and thank you to Netflix for bringing it to us. This episode also brought to you by the Fun Comfortable Tour.
Oh.
Well, I guess brought to you by because it's my podcast and my tour. But I'm performing in Los Angeles on Saturday night.
I like the idea that you put like money in your one hand and hand it to the other hand and went, that's a sponsorship.
I know. Well, you know, I'm terrified because I'm legitimately insecure about performing in Los Angeles because it's such a difficult city to sell tickets in. And I don't know how the shows are doing because I haven't asked. I literally could show up to the Regent Ballroom downtown on Saturday night and perform to two completely empty shows.
Oh, I've done something very similar to that downtown.
I know, and Lydia's inviting a bunch of her friends. I'm like, what if they show up and no one's there?
Oh, you've got to explain to her now. She's got to stop coming to stand-up completely. I banned my girlfriend from stand-up for a full year while I was working on stuff.
Oh, you've been...
I was like, oh no, when these work, you can come.
Yeah, but until then, I'm just going to the store for an hour. I'll be back. What do you got on the Nerdist Community Corkboard?
I got a really cool one. It's this guy Aaron, who's a listener, sent in a message that his friend Kyle is a ball cancer survivor.
Oh, wow.
And he took that horrible, horrible lemon and turned it into lemonade. He does a YouTube series called Check 15. It's all about different ways you can check yourself for ball cancer.
All right.
It's a mixture of how to check yourself to make sure that you don't have anything going bad downstairs, but also in an educational and fun manner. Like, that's kind of that's full-on Nerdist stuff right
now. I'm
there.
A little disturbed that you keep saying ball cancer.
Yeah.
Because it's
ball cancer.
The rest of it's serious.
It's both hilarious and upsetting. It's maybe the funniest disease.
It's sad-larious, the way that you say ball cancer instead of testicular cancer.
I mean butt cancer is worse.
Yeah, no, don't. But... Come on, Kyle. Why? Katie, what do you got on the corkboard?
I just want to remind people to check out our other shows on the network. The Todd Glass Show has been great lately. We also have the Nerdist Writers Panel, Bizarre States, Today We Learn. We have so many shows. And just go to Nerdist.com, click on podcasts, and they're all there.
Excellent. Thank you, Katie Levine. You know, I got to say, people have been asking a lot. I feel like we need to do a Hostful with you guys. Katie, I know you don't like talking about yourself, but people want to know more
right
about
now
Katie Levine.
She's so upset.
You know how long it took to get her to this point want to talk on the mic during corkboard?
Every time I hand her a mic, I'm like, it feels like a small miracle.
But the audience demands it. And we are
like
puppets
Ron
for their
Swanson.
Entertainment.
Like, you want no one to know any information about you except what your dog looks like.
What if it turns out that she's worked for the CIA the whole time?
I would believe that 100%.
Absolutely 100%.
I for sure believe that
right
now. You
guys, right I have now. To go right now. And
Scout is actually some robotic technology.
Oh, for
that,
sure.
Which is why it's always in power down mode.
Oh,
Scout is an acronym just, for something.
She's just recording everything.
Oh, no. But yeah, I think we should sit down and maybe do a Hostful with you guys just so people get to know you a little bit more, because they hear you all the time. They hear you howling in the background.
Yeah. And if you ever want to hear that howling closer to the microphone, you should listen to This Is Rad, which is my podcast that I do with Matthew Burnside.
Kyle Clark is Rad on Twitter, and KT_money on Twitter as well.
It's fun to call her that in real life.
This episode is Jonathan Kite, who is so fucking funny. He was so great. We had the Two Broke Girls episode.
He is a silly man.
Like,
he's one of those people like Andy Samberg, like Will Ferrell, where you just look at him and you start giggling because he's just funny.
Well, maybe this is one of those podcasts that people see the name and they go, I'm not 100%. Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
But then he's such a riff machine.
Yeah.
That it, like, he's a guy that you cannot out-riff him.
A lot of giggles on this one.
So
if you have signed up, good call.
Two Broke Girls returns early 2016. You can also see his stand-up and find out dates by following him on Twitter at JBKite, K-I-T-E. This episode also brought to you by Stamps.com. Kyle, are you familiar with the concept of stamps? It's the currency that allows us to send missives to people in real life.
Wait, there's a regular mail now?
Yeah, we've advanced from email to writing things down.
Oh, that's fun. That's cute. Is that like a little cottage industry?
Well, you drop them in a magic portal, a blue portal, much like the game Portal.
Is it like an augmented reality thing? Like, you go and put the letter in the box, and then someone like goes and picks it up and takes it somewhere else?
Yes, but the problem is that taking that letter to a box or to a place where you have to interface with other human beings is problematic.
Yeah, doing anything in real life is problematic.
So don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
You can use stamps.com and make it much easier. Print out the exact post message you need right from your desk, and then your mail carrier will just pick it up from your house.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And you should hug that person for doing that.
I'm not allowed to anymore. Turns out when your Christmas tip is a tip, if you know what I mean,
yeah, I know what
all
you
of
mean.
A sudden
all right,
your
I
mail
get it.
Carrier
Thank you, Kyle.
And a firmly worded letter.
Yeah, good. Okay, thank you. Stamps.com brings you all of the services you need from the post office. Any letter, any package, any class of mail. You're never going to waste valuable time going to the post office again. Focus on what matters, growing your business.
I knew I'd get you.
It's after you said tip and I said growing your business.
Yeah, yeah.
That made me giggle.
I love when you try to get away from the fact that you're a filth machine.
Stop it.
For like a minute and then you come back to the dark side.
I'm good.
Ball cancer.
Oh my God. Can I print out postage to mail you away?
I'm Nermal and you're Garfield.
You are Nermal. I don't know. You're like a cross between Nermal and Odie.
Yeah.
I feel like you're a healthy mashup of you're Nermal Odie.
In my mind, the healthy mashup is more like just like a John Carpenter's The Thing monster, but drawn by Jim Davis.
Now The Thing monster also hates Mondays.
Yeah.
Just so you
Who
know.
Who doesn't?
Loves lasagna, though. Right now, there's a 4-week trial on Stamps.com. Use the promo code Nerdist. $110 bonus offer. Postage, including a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone on the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist at Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist. Here's episode number 748 with Jonathan Kite.
Katie, fly the kite.
Oh, I know. I hate myself.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
If Cal was an Avenger, which Avenger would Cal be?
That's so funny. We were doing... If you ever go to like any of the Marvel movie premieres or something and you do the press line, it's always, what superpower would you? And I still don't have a good answer.
No, you they ask you like the weirdest, like I went to a premiere for Horrible Bosses 2 and they were like, what was the worst job you have? And all you don't want to like throw people under the bus on television.
Right.
And so I was trying to think of like an acceptable story where I didn't deserve the firing. Like every other job I'd had that I'd been let go of, it was like, yeah, you should have been out of there a long time ago. And so I'm trying to like think of, and my answers were super lame and I saw them all back and it just looks like a guy who like didn't care.
Well, it's hard because they're just trying to get sound bites. So it's, I think in those situations, the best thing you can do is just throw it so far into the past that it doesn't, or it's like, when I was in college, I got fired from The Gap, which is true.
Oh, but, did you get fired from The Gap?
Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. It wasn't so much that they were like, you're fired. They just stopped putting my name on the schedule.
That happened to me. I worked at Dockers.
They had a store?
They had one store one time. It was like a lost experiment. And it was in Old Orchard Mall. And what happened was...
It's like the Lost World, but with dads.
But with pleats. And like it's so funny. These two guys, one of the managers and one of the employees, were stealing from the company.
Oh.
And I actually wound up being the one that they had pinned it on. And then they couldn't prove it. And then the guy literally skipped the country.
Oh, Jesus.
That's the guy's name was Brian, if you're out there. And he and this employee, they stole all this stuff from the safe. And then they were like, they totally grilled me. And I'm like, how would I have any idea what the safe was? Nothing. And then, of course, the other two that they were trying to interview, they literally fled the country.
Oh, my God. With all their Dockers loot?
Yeah, which was worth nothing.
You know what would be really funny is just to see them in a hideout somewhere in South America, but it's only from the waist down, and you just see them in the Dockers.
In a bunker.
We sure got away with all that Dockers loot. What's in a Dockers safe besides...
Money.
Just money?
Dockers bucks. It's like, it was like them trying to come back and be The Gap. It was when they were making a real push to be, the hip standard that is The Gap. And it was with a Levi's store. And the only thing I really remember about it is a lot of tourists from Asia would come and try to buy like 100 pairs of Levi's and resell them overseas.
Sure.
So that they would limit. So the Levi's store was always packed with like people trying to, you know, do that. And the Dockers store just looked like a depressing yard sale, like a going out of business sale.
You can
just
sell our
opened.
Stuff in Asia. No, thanks.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah. We make it there. We're fine.
I wonder why a store like that doesn't want to just sell 100 pairs of Levi's. Like, why do you think they limit?
I don't.
If they're going to sell, they're going to sell. Do you think they're just like, we don't want you to resell this where we can't profit from it?
I think that's probably it. It felt like they limited it to like two pairs per person. So like family would just show up in a truckload and then everybody would just pick up like two pairs.
I don't know. I mean, I don't understand retail, so I'm sure there's a good reason for it. But in my mind, if I own a store, I'm like, I don't give a fuck who I sell 100 pair of jeans to. Just buy 100 pair of jeans.
I just need to get rid of these jeans.
You want to sell these in China for more money? I don't give a shit. It's like, it's not my problem anymore. You're taking them out of my store.
Right. That's the job of the store.
Yeah.
to sell jeans.
What you do with them afterwards, if you want to sell them or turn them into a mate and have sex, like, it doesn't matter what you do with it. If you want to come over and form it into a mate and we'll have a sex party with
pillow.
It, or if you want to spread its jean legs in my face and I'll eat it out, like whatever you would want to do with it. If you want to bend it over and stick a finger in its jean butt, whatever you would want to do with it tonight at my place,
This is like the video for new employees at the Levi's store. It's just Hardwick like listing these things that we have like a really poor reenactment.
That would be, you know, I feel like it'd be really fun to go through and just and make joke versions of store
of new
policy. New hire videos.
Well, I tried to apply for a job at Abercrombie & Fitch at the same mall, and you had to be super pretty. And this is a podcast, so people can't tell. But I didn't fit the mold, so I looked like a narc. Like I was in the room, like in the third or second interview, because my buddies worked there, and it was like the cast of the CW's Arrow,
right?
and Jonathan Paul Giamatti kite, and like it just looked like I was wearing a wire from another like store. It looked like, how did this guy
Arrow, The Flash, Sideways, Arrow.
Where's their Merlot? Like this like teenage kids just, you know, crazy about wine.
So you actually did not end up working at
No, and then the video was like everybody in it was so good looking and it was just like a weird video. Like it seemed like a movie. Like obviously they all get cast, but I mean, this just seemed like I was like, is this for Abercrombie & Fitch or Wilhelmina Models?
Right.
And it was just like how they're like rep the brand. But then at the time they were trying to, I think the focus for them was like 40-year-old men. So you'd have like these dads come in who were the exact opposite of the video. And like these young, good looking guys and girls would like sort of trick these older men into buying clothes that look poorly on them.
It's aspirational. Like they want to be associated with this cool. And it's kind of a gross way to market your brand. They have every right to do that, I guess. But I also have every right to not shop there.
No, I would not. It's gross. There's like that, you know, that the horror movie, The Fog.
Yeah.
That's like what the perfume is when you walk into Abercrombie. You're like hit with that. Like that's like, it's like a gross smell that doesn't leave your nose.
It's some type of mind control drug. It's real. They spray all the clothes with it, or at least they did.
It's being pumped in through the system.
And I think they've replaced the blood of the employees with that cologne so that they just exude it, because they've all died inside.
Oh my God.
They're basically just walking corpses.
They are mannequins that I wouldn't say came to life.
Right.
But they're just like, it's like mannequins. Mannequin, the movie, The Store.
Right.
It's just like they're just
Mannequin, the movie, the store. They're just animated mannequins. It's almost like a Twilight Zone episode where an old person goes in to get a new body and it's just all these kind of soulless, you know, like it's kind of automaton type creatures. But I honestly, and the bummer part is for the longest time, Abercrombie & Fitch made the only boxers that didn't irritate my sensitive bits, like because I like the boxer briefs.
Yeah.
And thank God, I'm not saying this because they've sponsored episodes, but when MeUndies started sponsoring the podcast, I was so happy because it meant I didn't have to buy Abercrombie & Fitch underwear anymore. Because I honestly felt like, it felt like such a Sith move to be buying Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah,
like,
and then having this secret
hatred.
Oh man,
the Emperor really sucks, but his socks are so comfortable. You know,
yeah,
the dark side socks are the best.
How did you figure that out that those fit you well?
You know, just years ago, I made the because I used to wear just regular boxer shorts. And then decided at one point a long time ago, like maybe I need a little more support in my day. And so happened to be in the cologne cloud of Abercrombie & Fitch and saw the boxer brief and thought, oh, that's a nice, They're not briefs, which to me are ridiculous looking underwear.
Yeah, yeah.
They're children's underwear.
Yes.
It feels weird.
They're garanimals.
They're garanimals, yeah. And so I liked the little trunk on the boxer brief, so I bought a pair, and they were really comfortable, and they were kind to my area. And then it was just like, well, and I did. I tried, you know, I would go to like Nordstrom and try a bunch of other brands, and there was always like, ah, these aren't comfortable, or they're rubbing, or it's not. And it was like I was a slave to the soft weave of the Abercrombie & Fitch, but the MeUndies brand is actually like a million times better. So I've been freed.
But I understand that about being like a loyalist. Like, it's like you really choose your side, like your civil war with your underwear, because it's something that you don't want to have to think about that. Like, I only wear Calvin Klein's because one time I was like in a Marshall's and they were on sale.
To the 50s and you met your
yeah,
mom.
I have a purple and I was like, no, it's Jonathan. Like, why? How do you even know what my underwear says? And so I. But I – well, that's – maybe – but he has on the briefs.
He has the briefs on. He had the purple briefs.
And I was like, oh, these are super cheap, so I'll buy them. And then they – like they were perfect. And so like I just – now I don't – so that I don't have to worry about, because I was overseas and they didn't have like – they had like, you know, like the off brands like Kluvin Clean. And I remember like I bought – like I was like, oh, my God, I ran out of underwear on a trip, and it was like one of those things where it was like it was super hot out and you were just like, you're not going through that, you know, this isn't college.
Oh, these are made of cow hooves.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah, but only the front part that touches your wiener.
Yeah, it touches the wiener. They really hold the inside of a cow.
It's right. It's the other that holds your sack.
And it is one of the small. I mean, I do think in most sectors. Men have it easier in a lot of ways, but the one thing that's difficult to convey is how important underwear choice is, because it really has to cradle these external things that are just always out in the open and need to be
taken care of.
Yes, in special.
It's like a papoose.
Yes,
you just have like this baby hanging off you.
It's like a dick
bjorn. Yeah, you get it.
It's a. I don't know if I do, but it's but
my name of my dick is Sacagawea.
But it's the problem is that it really can ruin like one bad pair of underwear or if your underwear gets wet if you're swimming, it can completely ruin your day.
Well, that's what it was, the Cleven Clunes or whatever. When I bought them, I was like, oh, these will be fine. They look acceptable, and they were. The most infuriating thing. It's just like the elastic was weird on one of the legs, and it just looked – and they were kind of falling apart. Like the moment I bought them and put them on was like the moment they began to die.
Yeah.
And so it didn't ruin the trip, but it was one of these things where I was like, man, don't ever try. And they were expensive too. They were like – it was when the euro was crushing the dollar.
Yeah.
And so I could only afford like two pairs. And it was, and they both wound up just being like garbage bags.
Side note: I named my balls Lewis and Clark. I wish I had said that earlier. But it's nice to. You were on the pot. You were on the At Midnight show a while back, and it was really fun.
That was it was awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And then you were also friends with an old friend of mine, Stephen P. Benequist.
Oh my God! When he found out that I was going to be on, he was like, "Please tell Mr. Hardwick hello."
Benequisto.
Yeah, see.
It was an Italian name, and then they dropped the O to sound American.
Yes, because we won.
What did we win? Steve was a dear old comedy friend of mine from years ago. Like, he was one of the first. He was one of the first friends that I had in the open mic scene when I started, you know, doing stand-up in the late 90s.
We ran an improv 2000. Team together. And so that's how we kind of got to know. We competed in the Io West cage match.
Oh, nice.
And so he and I and some of our good friends, like, we just went for a long time. So we became super close because we would have to perform and compete every week.
Mm-hmm.
So that really is like a band of brothers. It kind of, you know, really secures that friendship. So, yeah, I've known him a long time. He's such a great guy.
So you must be – are you going back soon to
work?
Yeah,
in a week.
Oh, you're going back in a week.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like school.
It totally is. Whenever we, like, I always Instagram first day of school because where everyone's back. We haven't seen each other. We're like comparing trapper keepers, and it's like, it's just, it's weird because you've been off all summer, and you know, like there's that moment in the movie Armageddon when they like know that they have a day off in between. They're going to have to go in space, and they just like go to the each corner of the Earth.
Yeah.
Like the moment we wrap, we're gone. We disperse, you know, like rats roaches when the lights go on. So we really haven't seen each other probably in like 4 months.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a really cool, like, hey, how are you? Like first, yeah, and that first week back is like impossible to get the work done.
I saw Beth at the Terminator Genesis premiere. I see her around from time to time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because her boyfriend was in it.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. I didn't see. How was the movie?
It was fun. It's really fun. Like, it's, you know, I don't think it got a ton of critic love, but I sort of feel like...
Neither did Waterworld, and let me just say, I love Waterworld.
That's one of those movies where even people of even millennials are like, oh, Waterworld. And they're like, you haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
It kind of got that... every handful of years, a movie comes along... like Ishtar.
I was just going to say it's my generation's Ishtar.
And I've heard other people go, you know, Ishtar's not that bad. But I think, you know, what I think part of the negative press that it gets is that these films were born out of a time where it was old media. And if something did not meet expectations, it was the definition of bombing was a lot different back then.
Yeah, of course. Well, also it they cost so much because the entire set was on water,
right?
And then like, which I mean, come on, if you're not James Cameron, you can't do that. And they would also like it got blown away in a hurricane or something, so they had to rebuild in the middle of shooting. And so like it cost double or something like that it would have cost anyway. So I feel like if it had only cost the original outrageous money, would still people have thought it bombed?
I just, you know, I appreciate Kevin Costner's kind of MO of, all right, Dances with Wolves. I'm just going to keep making these epic movies. But then it just... It's like, you know, break it up a little bit. Every movie doesn't have to be doesn't have to be Waterworld
Every
and the Postman.
Every movie doesn't have to top the last one minute wise.
Right. That's how you know you're doing better.
Yeah,
it's
they
longer.
More time,
more money.
More screen time. I got a better reel out of
this. Fuck it. Let's tear the set down and build it again. We got to spend more money.
Waterworld, you know, 2.
It's like.
Still wet.
What, from the first one?
Yeah. It's like Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
The only reason they have 70 of those movies is because they had all those costumes.
They got to do something.
I can't believe they didn't make like a whole Waterworld television series and like, you know, where it's just like them at a beach.
Yeah.
It became Baywatch or something.
What a watery world we live in. Save that guy.
Yeah.
But it's, I think when you see, I like to see actors who kind of, you know, okay, I did this crazy epic movie, and then I did this weird comedy, and then I did this kind of indie thing, and then I did a superhero thing, and then I did a weird dark thing. You know, it's like you like seeing people, but I'm sure there's a pressure of...
Well, that's the thing. Power's a weird thing because I think like one of my favorite actors is Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of Michael Keaton, in my opinion, and I love Tom Hanks as like one of my idols too, had a better career in the 80s than Tom Hanks did.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he was maybe more famous. He was doing bigger blockbusters. I mean, the memorable films like Beetlejuice, Mr. Mom, I mean, everything he was doing.
Yeah.
And then you realize that there is a pressure because you want to keep growing in the ranks. And then you realize he did like Jack Frost, which
right.
I don't know, maybe I would have accepted that movie too. But at some point, you kind of jump the shark.
Right.
And then you're past that point. It's like, how close can you get to that edge?
I think he did Multiplicity before. I think Multiplicity was the first one where I was like, I don't know if, and I thought I
liked that.
I like Multiplicity too, but I think in terms of perception in the industry, I think that was the first one that didn't explode because Tom Hanks really was just doing madcap comedies and romantic comedies
bombing. By the way, versus the Volcano.
Bachelor Party was huge, though.
I love it. I own it.
Bachelor Party was huge, but it wasn't until Big. Big was really the
absolutely
movie that, and that was late 80s, and so
yeah.
that was the movie that really, like, cause, you know, Splash obviously was a big thing for him, but Big was the movie that started his train to, you know.
Well, that he did it in a slow build, and he like kind of survived the madcap 80s.
Yeah.
Because so many of those guys that did screwball comedies, they didn't really have a career in the 90s because they were kind of looked at. Like, I love Steve Guttenberg, but his career in the 80s is significantly different than his career in the 90s.
Sure.
And so the thing is, like, it's interesting that Tom Hanks, by the end of it, is the screwball was kind of trailing off. He did the right move of doing Big.
Yeah.
Of showing, of being a screwball-y because he was essentially a kid in an adult's body.
But he was also lucky enough and fortunate enough to have been in the right group of people with Penny Marshall and Gary Marshall,
absolutely,
and the Babalu Mandels and all those people, and so that really helped too.
But it was a huge jump from like Big to AIDS.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was probably a risk on everybody's part, but it was such a, like, that's one of those things. It's just a great chess move.
Right.
I mean, a great script, obviously. I mean, incredible. But for him, for someone, a studio, for anybody to make that decision to be like, you know who would be really good is the guy who just played an adult kid.
Right.
You know, because people will connect with him. Like, it makes sense on paper, but at the time, those two movies are just such, you know, huge leaps apart.
Well, I'm sure it's hard because I think the viewing audience sees a certain chronology of film releases, and I don't think they understand how it, you know, like if someone makes three or four movies that are similar in a row, they've probably made them before any of them come out, and then they start coming out and people are like, why do you just like, oh, I don't know, I just was making these and now it seems like
that's the weird thing about gaining weight and losing weight, because yeah. You'll see like somebody who made a film when they were maybe super heavy or super thin, and then like they'll not be that way anymore, and then they're like, here's a new movie from this guy, and you're just like, whoa, how many years ago was that shot?
Yeah,
because you don't look anything like that anymore.
Right.
And the studios will like shelve stuff until like your star is rising, and then they'll just, you know, try to be like, meep, get in on that star.
Yep.
They'll like Marty McFly it on the back of a car with a skateboard.
So did you do a movie or anything when you had your break? Or
no, I actually toured. I got into stand-up a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and the summer is really the only time that I can tour around.
Yep.
And so I did like a pretty large, like a tour all around the country, and then I went to Toronto, and I actually just got back from China.
Oh, wow.
Doing stand-up, which was...
You did stand-up in China?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was amazing. Dude, it was so sick because, A, they know... I mean, the younger generation, they speak English very well. So it's like, you know, people were like, is there a huge language barrier? I'm like, yeah, maybe 20 years ago, but not now. And so the show... I was told when I was there that Two Broke Girls is the number one non-Chinese show in the country. So... everybody who came out, I actually played a theater for the first time. I'd never played theaters before because in the States and like I, you know, in Canada for me, it's always like the club circuit. But I sold out a theater there, and that was pretty nuts. And they all knew. So I had to. The weird thing was though, I don't do Two Broke Girls material because like I think the show is very fun and funny, but I don't really. I'm in it, so I don't really have that like. I don't know, like, the jokes to make about it. Like, to me, it's a very different thing that I think...
It's a character. You play a character.
Exactly. And then everyone wants to know, like, you know, HR jokes and sexual harassment. You know what I mean? But I don't just do those because, you know, they're just not a part of my act. So I had to write, like, 25 minutes because they specifically asked, can you do material on the show?
Oh.
And I remember thinking, like, I guess. But I don't, you know... So I literally had to go back and tell stories. I tried to make it, like, a kind of these long stories that had kind of jokes along the way,
mm-hmm.
that I'd never told before. And
you guys know Morgan Murphy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I had a slideshow behind me, just rando pictures.
Morgan was another one in our little open mic.
She's awesome.
Group. I famously, well, famously to Morgan and me, bought Morgan her first legal alcoholic beverage when she turned 21.
Oh, really?
I did. Yeah, I was still drinking a lot back then. So naturally, I wanted everyone else to do it too. But
you're of age. Join me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, you know, Morgan and Jonah Ray, like I met all of those people at BJ Novak and Dan Mintz. Like it was all similar.
Isn't
similar
that crazy?
Time.
Like if you're here long enough, the people that you start out with, like, become the people.
Stay in the game.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you can survive that, like, it's funny, like, you go to a thing and you realize, like, I went to a premiere the other night and I had been in the business, I guess, long enough where I realized I looked around and I was like, oh my God, I know that person. I know that person. But that's so, it just feels weird.
Yeah.
We all knew each other back when we were all, like, you know, working whatever jobs and like being like, we're both going to make it and high-fiving randomly.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it really is like the baby turtles in the sand.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, if you can just stay in the game, a lot of people actually just give up and there's, you know, they're just screaming to the, eat me, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Consume me world. Yeah. They're like,
but
in
if you
Jedi,
can make it,
they're
if you
just
can
making
make it
down
to the water,
pit.
You know, you have an excellent shot just by virtue of the fact that most people will give up.
Yeah, and it's cool. Like, you want to see your friends succeed. Like, that's the cool thing about, we just said, Steve Benequist. Like, he's still out here. You know, he's working, and I've known him now so long that it just feels cool that we're kind of, like, in it together. yep. that your friends are on this journey. It's nice, you know, to see your friends succeed and know that, like, hey, man, we're all making it. This is cool.
Do you how many seasons has Two Broke Girls been in?
We're about to start season 5.
Whoa!
That's I try to explain to my father, who he like if I ever came out with a comedy album, I thought I was going to call it, I think I'm going to call it My Dad Always Wanted Me to Be a Plumber.
Yep.
Because like I would tell him I would get a job. And he would be like, great. And I'm like, no, it's a big deal. And he was like, how many days are you working? And, you know, I'm like, it's not, I don't really have a punch card, but it's, you know, it's like we got picked up for a season. And so, like, I try to tell him the magnitude of going 5 seasons. Like, that's impossible, I told him. I was like, you could know a million actors forever and, you know, never one of them would be on a show for 5 years.
Yeah, it's not being a plumber. Yeah, because plumbers don't go into syndication.
Yeah, so. Exactly. He's like, yeah, but plumbers, I said to him, I go, Dad, the only, because he was not worried about stability, but he's always like, well, how's the money? And he knows that the landscape is changing. I'm like, the only plumber that makes more money than me is Super Mario.
Not Luigi.
No, come on. No, Luigi. Luigi's living off of Mario's couch.
Seriously. Just hanging around haunted houses. I honestly, I think the way to express it is like, look, Dad, imagine if you got paid for 20 years for a sink that you fixed one time.
One time. Yeah, exactly. It's like
you unclog a drain and then you just get checks for that drain every week.
I think because that doesn't happen in any other, like almost any other profession,
right.
you know, outside the arts. And so I think that's a weird concept for people to understand. I mean, my parents are very supportive and wonderful, but it's, you know, I take a step back and I'm, you know, season 5 just seems like insane to me. I mean, I'm so thankful, but it's like, you never think, like when you do a show, you hope you're like, oh man, I hope the pilot gets picked up.
Yeah.
Man, I hope we get picked up for a full season. And then when we got like season 2, it was like, you know, it was like we're all jumping up and down like freeze frame credit sequence. Like we couldn't, you know. It
really takes that long. I mean, even like Big Bang Theory it took many seasons. And then at a certain point, it just tips. And it's like, okay, well, now this is one of the biggest shows in the world. Like it just, but it takes that long.
Yeah, well, especially today with all of the competition that's out there, you know, I think when people had less options, you kind of knew what was going to go and what wasn't, you know? It's like when there was like the 4 major and then, but now everything is successful. I mean, like cable, internet, it's all, you're like competing against everything.
Yep.
And so we're just never sure. Like, obviously we love being on the show and we hope that people like continue to watch and are having as much fun viewing it as we are making it. But you know, like I think maybe you haven't, but like you ever do something where you're like, this is going to kill. And then you see the final product and you're just like, oh, my career's over.
It's going to kill my career.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Of course. Cause there's so many factors that you can't control. So it is insane. I'm going through it with, well, I can't believe we're already, We're going to go into our 3rd season of At Midnight in October.
Congratulations.
And our 5th season of Talking Dead. That freaks me out too. Like 5 years is half a decade. That's fucking crazy.
You had a buddy of mine on Talking Dead, Ross Marquand.
Oh, Ross is great.
I've known Ross for a long, long time. He's another guy. We're like, we've just knew each other for so long. And then it was like when he got that, I couldn't have been happier for him.
And he's doing a great job on the show and instantly, you know, it was fun for, I think it's fun for people to see the comedy dimension in people, you know, because people who weren't familiar with him before, and they see him on Walking Dead and then find out like, oh, he's this great impressionist and he does this really great, he does the best Harrison Ford. He does a lot of great impressions, but just, I think seeing that kind of depth gives people, and that's the other thing about hanging in for a long time is that by the time people do discover you, it gives them this kind of rabbit hole to go down and go, oh, wow, this guy does all these other things that I had no idea about.
Yeah, well, you're invested, so then you see them as people instead of just characters.
Right.
You know, which is cool. I mean, that's the other thing that's nice about being like on a season as long as we have, that like you get to kind of like expressing myself as a person and not as like a Ukrainian chef, which is great for the show. But you'd be surprised, when I was in China, they, honest to God, they all think that that's me.
Oh,
like,
really?
Oh my, it like blows them away. Like the biggest question I always get asked is, have you ever seen the show Two Broke Girls? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, has anyone ever told you look like the chef? And like, I was with my mother in Minnesota doing stand-up, and she came along for the ride, and it happened when we were together, and my mother just turned and she's like, it's him.
I never know how to answer that question when people are fishing around like, do you ever watch Talking Dead? Well, Technically, no.
No, I've never seen it.
Technically, I don't watch it because, you know.
Yeah, I lived it.
I'm on it. Yeah,
you should say that. You go, no, I live it.
Yeah, but it is one of those, like, yes.
Well, you don't know what to say because I never say, like, it's me from the show. Like, yeah. I never do that. One time I was in Chicago, I got taught a lesson because I never said it. And there was, like, one day I was back and somebody had asked me. I probably got asked, like, 3 or 4 times in one day. And I was just like, they're like, how do I know you? How do I know you? And then I think I was, like, doing something and I was trying to leave a place with a buddy who I hadn't seen in a while. And they were like, hi, do I know you? And I literally, I think I was almost, like, getting into a car or something. And I turned and it just because I didn't want to, like, I didn't want to be rude, but I also didn't want to, you know, like get into like a conversation about it. And so I was like, have you ever seen the show Two Broke Girls? And they're like, no, you know what? I know your brother.
Right, right, right.
That was the one time. And I was like, oh my God.
And you know, what people don't understand is like, no, but this is something that happens all the time. I'm not being a dick. It's just, this is something that happens all the time. And so I'm conditioned to think that that's what this is.
Yes.
Please, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be.
And then of course I did stay and have the conversation because I felt like such an ass. So I was like, yo, tell me more. I'm like, we'll be late to the movie. It's fine.
I think maybe like a year and a half, 2 years ago, I sat next to Kat on a plane back from New York.
Oh, cool.
And we struck up a conversation because she doesn't love flying. And so, you know, and I used to not like flying and I did a 180 on it. And so I'm very sympathetic when people, because I understand it.
Yeah, yeah. What didn't you like about flying?
Well, I think it was a lot of first, I think it was the human factor of like, we shouldn't be up this high. Then it was also a little bit of claustrophobia. But they all boiled down to control issues and just sort of being trapped on a thing that I didn't have control over. And then when I realized in 2008, 2009, that I was going to start touring a lot with comedy, I was like, well, I can either be a basket case every time I get on a plane.
Or road trip.
Or I can just fucking let it go. And so I, you know, it took a while, but I chipped away at it with each flight. I got better and better and less stressed and less stressed. And I got these great kind of meditative, relaxing flying programs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sort of walk you through. And, you know, eventually it just went away and now I just fall asleep. Like it doesn't freak me out. I don't get worried anymore. But I am very sympathetic when someone's nervous and like, hey, you know, I used to be there. It's totally fine. We're good.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's the thing is someone like you who does fly a lot, that like means something. Cause I always figured like when I was on a plane that we were going to die. Like there was because I went through a lot of like weird flights and stuff where one time we almost crashed. Like it was one of these things where I think that we were caught in a storm. I've been caught twice, once in a lightning storm and once coming back from New York to L.A. And there was like these two very old, I mean like old enough to be Chinese deities, like sitting next to me and this woman and I'm in like the corner, like the back, kind of like the worst seat in a movie theater. Mm-hmm. And this woman is just vomiting in a bag next to me. And the plane is going up and down like a yo-yo. And like the flight attendants who are supposed to be the most calming, you know, like, you know, animals in the world is just running up and down the aisle like a character and a sketch. And he's just like, is there a doctor? Is there a doctor? And like, I guess on one of the bumps, somebody hit their head or something. And so it was, the whole thing was going to hell.
Well, bad call on that flight attendant's part because I feel like they are supposed to be trained.
They are, and that was what worried me. He was the thing that worried me.
Of course, you look to him because they're on a million flights, you know, and if they're freaking out, then you know, like you do look around and go, okay, well, they seem fine.
Yeah, I'm like, is this your first rodeo? and he was flipping out, and I remember like I closed my laptop, I put my head down on the tray, and I was like, this is it, this is how you're gonna go. Because and then I remember thinking like after that experience, I was never afraid on a plane. Like, you know, like those smaller cities, you have got to take a little charter planes, you know? I'm like, the plane that Bane crashed in Dark Knight Rises was, you know, bigger than the plane I'm on right now.
Right.
And so those things, like if somebody farts, like the plane kind of does one of these, right, you know? But after that experience, I'm just like, you know what? If it's your time to go, it's your time to go.
Yeah. And it's obviously it's not impossible. It just is less likely, but several things have to go wrong for that to happen. But I still also feel like, you know what? statistically, it is safer than walking out into the street.
Oh, totally.
And I also feel like...
Well, just because it's publicized, when something happens like that, it becomes like the biggest thing in the world.
If they reported every time a flight landed safely...
Yes.
You would never...
I mean, or the time just, every time there was a car accident.
Right.
If they were, that's all, there would have to be a Fox News channel that was just called car accidents.
Someone from Fox like, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, shit. Get the shit out of people.
All right, Rupert Murdoch, contact me if you're listening.
Another car accident at the corner of Western and Hollywood.
Sorry, Chris, don't mean
Thanks,
to interrupt.
Obama. Yes.
I don't mean to interrupt, but there was, we have the breaking news, another car accident.
Oh, I'm just breaking in two. There's actually three more car accidents over here.
Yeah. Hold on. Give me one more. It's just them. Always 24 hours of breaking news car accidents.
And I think I'm just more comfortable now with like, well, I don't know. I mean, at a certain point you kind of have to go like, well, if I'm going to die that way, I'm there's nothing
to do
about
saying.
It. I'm not, it's like, I'm not, I can't not live my fucking life.
And planes are safer now. Like there's those one called the Dreamliners or whatever. I took one once and it's like supposed to level off. So even if there's bad turbulence, like there's something in the plane that makes it feel, you just don't feel every little thing.
Right.
It's like riding up high in like an SUV as opposed to a low rider.
Right.
So that you don't feel anything. And so I remember that. I was like, we could have died and I wouldn't know. It's, you know, I think that's what they were flying in Lost.
Yeah.
Like they all died and didn't know because they were on a Dreamliner.
It'd be great if they could install something where if it seemed like the plane was going to not make it, that they would just like shoot nitrous oxide.
I was just going to say that. They just start pumping it full and you're like, whoa, man.
Maybe that's what's in the oxygen.
The oxygen.
And there's a setting where it's like, give them the nitrous. But, I'm sure there are people who are listening to this on a plane right now going, what are you talking about? But here's the thing. You're going to be fine.
You're going to be fine.
You're going to be okay.
With the calming voices of Hardwick and Kite.
Hardwick and Kite are here to remind you, you're going to land safe. It may not seem like it by now, but you're going to be
sorry,
okay.
I got to interrupt this. There's an accident.
There's a car accident, but several car accidents below you.
Below you that you can't
right
see.
Now. You're flying over a ton of car accidents.
Thank God you weren't in one of those cars.
I mean, how thankful should you be to be on
thank God
that,
you fly.
On that plane.
That should be Americans like, thank God you flew. But you do. It's I mean, and when you have to fly, you're right. The more you do it, you just figure your body's just like whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I can't. You get to a point where there's only so much anxiety that your shoulders can handle, and then you're like,
there are some planes, though, to be fair to people who do have that fear, that look like the plane from Con Air.
Right.
Like you got to update these planes, man. So they just look like old. Like all the seats are like old Lazy Boy like furniture from Ashley Furniture from 1983. And you like this.
I understand that they can change the mechanical parts that make the plane fly. But when I get on a plane and I see like old ashtrays fused shut,
yes,
with like cigarette burns still on them,
come on,
could you just fucking replace this?
You're telling me that there's carpet in front of me? Like you remember when they used to put like carpet on everything?
Yes.
I was just like, this doesn't make like this seems like a disaster movie that goes down.
I've been very much enjoying American Airlines lately. Virgin America's great. Delta, Delta's good. Delta's good. Delta has good headrests. But, I got to say, like, every time I fly United, I'm like, nope.
I was just going to say, I'm the only person I know who has a positive experience on United.
You do?
I do. And I don't know what it is. Like, fly with me. We'll have a positive experience. They have a lot of leg room, which I'm not like super tall. I'm not NBA height, but like, and some of those planes, like there's just no leg room for me. So my brain just kind of was like, oh yeah, we're going to use United because it feels bigger. And then I've just had good experiences.
The last few times I've flown United, it just like the planes were older and the service wasn't great and the food was bad. Like just kind of it was just like a checklist of like, oh, that too. And there was no internet and that, it was just.
I totally get it. I flew, I'm the way with Virgin because everyone I know flies Virgin has like this, euphoric experience. And then I went on Virgin a couple times and I was like, the flight crew was brought to you by the adjective snarky.
Well, like right when you get down and their previous seatbelt thing was like, for the points, 001 of you fucking idiots. And I appreciate
that so they a were, sense of humor yeah, and like, yeah, of course.
But the I will say,
well, their slogan was like, "Virgin, we're not your dad's airline.
Your dad's a dumb piece of shit." But it's now with Virgin, I will say the seatbelt jingle that does drive me a little kooky.
Yeah,
like I've heard it. It's adorable when you hear it the first couple times, but if you hear it with regularity, it's just like, the guy, don't make me tell you again. Like, just fucking, just tell me to sign my seatbelt.
The guy who recorded that committed suicide.
I'm sorry for what I've done.
It's just playing, and his body's just swinging back and forth. That's how they found him.
On the reel-to-reel. It was recorded on reel-to-reel. Okay?
Hilarious. It was recorded in the bathroom on Virgin. They have huge stalls. It's like a handicapped stall in a Virgin plane. They have good amenity. Like, there's
good. Great. Yeah,
the food is really good, and you know, you feel like you're almost. And that's the thing is, like, I feel like. And listen, we're gonna get tons of calls about my snarky comment, but I don't know what it was about. Repeatedly, I get weird staff. Like, everybody is. It's like everybody's just waiting for their modeling career to take off.
Or
their last flight.
Or it's kind of like that old like Ed DeBevick's model of like, hey, it's funny because they're being snarky on purpose. And then at a certain point, it's like, I don't want to steeplechase.
Yeah,
I just want to. I just
want
to rest.
I just want the check.
I just.
I know. Oh, yeah.
It's okay, Your Majesty. Yeah. Give me the fucking check.
Yeah. Whoa. Sorry. Didn't realize we had a transaction to do here.
Yes, we do.
It's a restaurant.
I have to go. Why did I come in here? It's my fault.
That you're so right though. I remember like Ed DeBevick's are some of the longest meals I've ever had.
And it's
no wonder they don't turn over tables there.
You think it's going to be fun? And this whole idea of like, let's go to a place where they jokingly treat us like shit.
Hey, yeah, that's what the 50s is known for. 1950s when we all hated each other. Yeah, well, that would be the real Ed DeBevick's. They would only treat people of color that way.
That would be terrible.
That would be terrible. That would be the worst. You're like, why would you? They're like,
this is a real 50s diner.
We're diehard reenactors, okay?
Good. Lasted one day, someone burned it down. Crazy.
Do you have a Jim Crow section?
That's
that
nuts.
That doesn't make sense.
I mean, come on, guys.
You can still smoke in there.
I mean, I appreciate authenticity to a degree.
But I was there. We being from that area, like we were. I actually went to Ed DeBevick's all the time growing up.
Around the Beverly Center?
Oh no, was there one out here?
Where were you grow up?
Chicago.
Oh yeah, there was an Ed DeBevick's by the Beverly Center for years.
Oh my god, we had one same downtown thing. And in the suburbs.
And it was all like it was like basically like improv act and sketch
yeah,
actors.
Yeah, that's
and
they, of course from Chicago. Course. Same thing. Yeah.
Which in theory is fun, but
the pitch is dynamite. We're gonna get these. It's like, have you been to Michelli's?
Oh, of course. Yeah,
where it's like it's gonna be these great singers. Which, by the way, I love great Italian food and I love great singers. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I think is a little bit like is a little bit like intrusive is if you're ever on a date there and someone is like singing like "Bring Them Home" from Les Mis, like at the table. Where, you know, with the mic turned to Spinal Tap 11.
You just know not to go there on a first date if you want to converse.
Yeah.
Or you do go there on a date where you don't want to have to talk a lot because it gives you, oh, we can talk about the waiters. We don't have to talk about ourselves.
Michelli's number one choice for blind dates. But it's like, you're right. That you that is going to be like, that is a third person on that date. That's like a you, me, and Dupree date.
Right.
And so you have to prepare for that because a buddy of mine works there and, you know, we go all the time and I have my birthday there many, many years in a row. And it was – I feel like that's a cool setting. But I see all these people on dates and like it always just looks like the date isn't going well.
Oh, you want – we on a date together.
Yeah.
Me and the boys, we fuck your date on the pasta sink. No.
It's your date is a family style.
Wait, what?
Oh, the Beppo.
Oh, stop. What are you? That's not the pepper that I'm crushing on.
Yeah, it's not.
Oh, come on,
yeah,
Luigi.
You want some come on your salad?
No.
No.
Luigi, please.
Salad.
This is why you can't hold down a job.
No, he said no. Stop unzipping.
Oh. Hey, Luigi, it's Mario. Will you stop embarrassing the family?
He owns the restaurant, too.
He owns the restaurant, yeah.
He owns every job that Luigi is like.
He's trying to help him.
He's an assistant manager, Luigi. Even Wario has a better position at the job than Luigi. Oh, you're telling me Toad is the manager?
At a certain point.
I can't bump you up.
At a certain point, just going to be like, Bowser, I can't deal with Luigi anymore. We
Will
had
you
that conversation ago. Please, just let him know.
The other, what's the shy guy? The shy guy who hates confrontation from Mario 2 has to fire Luigi. Hates it. But you know, it's, I think that's like those theme thing. It's funny, I didn't know that Edda Bevix was out here.
Yeah, yeah, it closed years ago, but when I was in high school and college, it was out here.
Yeah, it's a weird, that it is, it's such like a great, it's like the, obviously they had what's it called, Hollywood, what was the Hollywood Planet, thank you, Planet Hollywood. It's like a great idea, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, who else was it, Sly, and then Bruce Willis. We're like going to make this, you know, there's going to be like a theme there.
Yeah, but, off the Hard Rock. Let's make the Hard Rock, but for movies.
Exactly. And then you get in there and you're kind of just like, oh, so this is like a Schwarzenberger?
Right.
You're like, well, I don't know what it's called. I just made it. But it's like, you know what I mean? Like, that's like the most, like, then there was nothing. Like, the Inception, like, that's almost a sketch, like, pitching themed restaurants yeah. that never go anywhere.
I think it was the Schwarzenegger with Juice Willis.
Oh, that was the breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, but it'll make you die hard.
Or no, or the Schwarzenegger rolls. They don't even. You always puke those up, and they're like, they'll be back.
Oh, remember when God. I said that you would shit me out last?
I lied.
Hasta la vista, pasta la vista, baby.
Pasta la vista. Oh! I didn't. Where were
we're
we doing? There?
We're literally writing a menu.
We're gonna go there. That probably is.
Yeah,
a real
that's
thing.
A real yeah. thing.
The worst hackiest thing you can think of is actually probably a real thing somewhere.
Rocky Road. That's the only thing Sly can come up with. Oh, I got ice cream. Okay, Sly, give us a second, buddy. Oh, he just
no.
Yeah.
I think it's Cradle the Matzo Balls.
Oh, nice, nice.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Are you guys in the middle of...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. We're already... We're recording the previous podcast before.
Okay.
So welcome to being on this one.
Come on in. It's a crossover podcast.
Yes, Diablo Cody is going to be recording next.
Oh, that's awesome.
Diablo Cody's representative? Who,
and
who also, didn't knock.
Yeah, and also, by the way, who didn't, and I, like, I mean, again, he's going to come after me. We're, like, sitting here in front of mics talking, and everyone has gear on. And he's just like, what are you guys doing in here? Yeah.
Nothing.
Building a pillow fort.
Yeah. don't be confused. These microphones are actually pillows.
Yeah, don't be confused. We are delusional.
Yeah.
And no one listens to this. We're, like, just talking to each other.
These wires aren't hooked up to anything.
This is, like, this couldn't look more like a podcast set. Like, than in my life. Like, this looks like a Smithsonian exhibit for what podcasts look like.
And I love how even it was like, oh, we're actually doing the bucket. Didn't dissuade him at all from like, oh, well, I'm here.
Yeah, we're doing a podcast. Okay. Great, because I have a bunch of Chinese food. That was like Diablo Cody's rider was like just pounds of Genghis Cohen. Did you see how many bags that guy had with him?
That was a lot of food.
If he had a shopping cart, you might think he was a crazy cat lady.
Yeah, but no cats, just a lot of food.
Yeah, well, maybe they were in the food.
We don't know. We're not 100% sure.
I'm always wondering what people order. Like, that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, that's where my stomach goes. I'm like, what's in those bags?
You want to know.
I don't care who this guy is.
Right.
And that, or the fact that he clearly doesn't understand what a podcast looks like.
Well, we...
That doesn't concern me at all. I want to know what he's eating.
This is a... But who knows? Maybe it could be a weird that it's, if he doesn't recognize this is a podcast, maybe he doesn't actually recognize food. It could be just like boxes full of bolts.
That's his luggage.
He carries his luggage around in styrofoam
with
and
plastic bags.
Yeah. That's, oh, I know I have two carry-ons here. Is that okay?
Yeah, can we see if they fit in there?
Yeah. Just what's in there? Fresh underwear.
People have the weirdest, though. You travel. Like, the weirdest thing that I always realize is there. Some people are just like, their idea of space is insane to me. Where, like, now they have to have a box that says, if you don't fit in this box, you need to have your eyes checked.
Right.
Because I've seen guys who look like... They're going to have Mount Everest climbing bags. Like, I just flew back from Seattle, and this guy probably went mountain climbing. He tried to carry on, like, something that you would climb Everest with.
Right.
Like, a full-body snuggy backpack.
And probably didn't understand.
No, I'm like, he couldn't even – I'm like, if you're having trouble getting it down the aisle, you do realize as you go to the back of the plane, the upper head bin space gets smaller.
Yeah.
I don't know where he was going to put it. It was not going to fit under the seat or whatever. I'm like, hopefully you bought a seat for your luggage and you're just going to like seat belt it in or something.
Oh, there's babies in here. That's so it's okay.
I'm transporting babies. Guys, it's fine. It's just human trafficking.
It's just babies.
They don't know.
They don't know. They're asleep.
Yeah.
They've been gassed. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's weird when you travel, like, and again, I don't, I don't know who this guy was. I mean, maybe there were important things like organs in there or something.
Sure.
But it's like, you know, you travel with
pipe
people now.
Organs.
Pipe organs?
Yeah.
It was just a bagpipe that was meant to look like a backpack because he was embarrassed of playing it.
But if you're traveling in Scotland,
you can't go out with...
You're going to have to check the bagpipes.
Had you been to Scotland?
Yes.
You've been there for Fringe? Or
I've seen Fringe. I haven't performed in Fringe. I've been to Scotland twice.
I just got back. There really is... And I was in Edinburgh, which is like the most touristy area. Like everything was plaid. Everything. But you couldn't go... I feel like everyone's ringtones were bagpipes. Oh, sorry. That's yours or me? We both have this?
Yeah,
we both have bagpipes.
The thing that's fascinating to me about Edinburgh is that it's how stratified the city is to represent the social classes, that the poor people really did live on the bottom and the rich people would literally dump their buckets of shit out onto the poor people.
You are so right. It's like it's a castle in the clouds.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it spirals down. It's like, have you been to Prague?
I've not been to Prague.
Like, no. The castle from the 1300s, they built it from, like, historical. So as it gets newer, you can almost see, like, a time lapse of the thing getting newer. But the rich are in the middle and then at the top, and everybody just kind of, like, trickles down.
Yeah.
It's like the one percenter and then everybody else.
It's a physical representation of
where you
their
stand.
Place in life.
It,
yeah.
Right, in the pyramid.
Yeah.
It's weird. And because, yeah, obviously. I mean, even in the hills... Like, there are, you know, like, we sort of do that today, but it's not more obvious than it is in Edinburgh.
Right. Yeah, I've seen that, too, you know, and speaking of, well, to go back to earlier, snazzy airlines, Lufthansa.
Yeah. Are
so
you
great.
Kidding? The only problem I have with Lufthansa, and they are legends, by the way, I had this German guy in the, I don't know if it was just him, he was telling me that if I wanted to upgrade, it was going to be $2,000 or something, and I thought I could use my points. And he, in the most polite but like kind of like, I'm gonna use the word snarky way, he was like giving me the number as if it was like, so if you have like $2,000 cash, we'll be happy to upgrade you. Like, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, I can't use my points. And he was like, no.
You stupid, yeah, stupid child.
Yeah, and if you know anything about anything, you would know that.
Like, this is Gunther, this man probably also think that the podcast room is not a podcast room.
It was that
he
guy.
He probably think it's an eatery of some type.
He's like, Gunther, well, let me call over my manager, Gunther, to find out. Gunther, this American wondering if he can use points.
One second, I'm busy over here with the Diablo Cody podcast.
Oh, are you guys running a podcast over here?
A podcast over here?
I thought it was a sale on microphones. I thought it was just a really shitty garage sale. You only have three microphones and a laptop? Clearly American. It was just like, I was like, no. And the guy was like, so if you just have like $2,500. No, it was $2,500. But he said, he was like, let me check. And the guy knew the whole time. He knew I couldn't do points because I fly United enough. It's a Star Alliance partner. This has just been one ad for the airlines, you and I.
Well,
we better get free flights out of this, Chris.
It's a fair and balanced, you know. We're talking about the ones that well, because flying back from Austria on Lufthansa was amazing.
Yes.
And American has a fleet of A321s that are super updated LA to New York. So I've been super into those, you know.
Like, you do. That's the thing. You get like – I feel like it's not even like a money thing. You just – you know what you want.
Well, because if you have to do it a lot, it's
like underwear.
It's like underwear. Flying is underwear.
It really is.
Flying is underwear. I need the plane to cradle my balls in a comfortable way.
Which they do – well, they don't do that on Virgin. Virgin won't cradle your balls.
No, because it's a Virgin.
There you go.
They don't – I don't know.
But there are, sir, I'm telling you, like, I think with United.
What are you going to call from Virgin? Guys, we will totally cradle your
guys,
balls.
Guys, you haven't been on our newest planes, the Cradler?
the 787 Creamliner, they will totally cradle your balls.
It's just a hand. It's just like, and it's like, it's on the bottom, so it's just like you can pull it up or down. It's literally, it's a cup holder.
We need you to... We need your ball cradler down for taxi and takeoff.
Say, guys, yeah. Everything has to be up and off you, and it's like, but it feels so good. That's how they wake you up. They tap it, sir.
You know,
sir.
Is seeing different rules on different airlines. Because flying back, I was in Montreal last weekend, and flying back on Air Canada, you're not allowed to have your personal headphones in for takeoff and landing.
Which, isn't that weird?
And it, I mean, I guess I understand that if takeoff and landing is when something's more likely to happen, and they probably want people paying attention to the.
But why does only Air Canada have that? I mean, it's like you don't.
I don't. Maybe it's all of Canadian airlines. I don't know. I've only flown Air Canada, so I don't know. But
they brag that they are the number one airline in North America for the past umpteenth year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That every time that I've flown Air Canada, I feel like they let you know how great. People think they are.
There's a lot of ways to judge number one, though.
Yeah, it's like a J.D. Powers Associate Award. Right. It's like everyone gets some award.
It's like if someone makes like a horror movie about rats, and then whenever it opens, they're like the number one rat horror movie in America.
No, this summer
is this summer.
There's another one in the winter that's going to top it. But you're right. They do. It's weird, like the reviews. And then the thing is, like, I don't check the bibliography on plane reviews. Or like, you know, so I don't know where they're pulling that from or whatever.
Right.
But that's such a weird thing, I think, to announce on a flight you're already on. Like, you don't have to convince me. I'm here. Yep. You have my money. I'm in the seat. I'm not going anywhere. And then they're saying it like, tell your friends.
Right.
But if I had a bad experience, I'm like, we almost died, but they said they were the number one.
They're number one at almost killing people. But the I always feel bad for a flight attendants when they have to read when they have to do the credit card pitch. Because you can hear in their voice like, the subtext is... No, I mean like the credit card deals, like sign up for this credit card.
Yeah.
You'll get points. Like you can just feel in their voice the I'm sorry, I have to do this. I apologize.
Well, it's the German guy who's like rewarding you, who's like, and we'd like to give a special thank you to the people that are already in the freaking flyer who are earning valuable miles with each flight. And if you're not, you're a complete fucking moron.
Like Jonathan Kite.
Yeah, Jonathan.
No, that he couldn't use points.
Even if I'm not on the flight.
Yeah.
It's like,
this is one kite who cannot fly.
Yeah. We're like, were you on the flight the other day? Because this guy was just bashing you.
I think it was all of Lufthansa, actually.
I'm in the program. There's just like an X over me.
But it's just a weird like paparazzi photo of you at the counter, like throwing up your arms.
It's
like,
me,
I don't know.
Eating a burrito, hammered at a stand that is clearly closed and wanting me to leave.
Your pants are down.
There's a lot of employees who are just like pointing at watches, like in the background. And me being like, can I get one more sauce?
And they've drawn like a cartoon gas out of your butt. Like you're just farting.
The whole photo has then also been graffitied like Snapchat.
Yep.
I'm like, gee, that's the press photo we're using, guys?
Thank you for flying Lufthansa.
Thank you.
Unless you're Jonathan Kite.
Unless you're, no, Jonathan. They like to have me as the example. Stand up. Stand up. Why do I keep flying them? That doesn't make sense from my point of view.
I keep hoping it's going to get better.
I keep hoping that they'll be like, guys, I'm here. And they're like,
I don't even have to go to Germany. I'm just doing this to try to understand.
I'm the only one who's flying domestic flights in America on Lufthansa.
I'm getting off in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm not flying to Germany.
No, it's too far.
But you are not wrong. Those are gorgeous,
really
planes.
Nice planes.
I don't know how they get it so right.
Germans are good with engineering and precision, and they know how to cradle the balls.
Well, they have a standard that, and I feel like once they've acquired, they won't deviate from it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think there's so many, because America's so big, there's like, really like Frontier and Spirit and, where it's like you pay for the seat, but you didn't pay for that armrest.
Right.
You didn't pay for the bags. You didn't pay for everything is an add-on.
Right.
And it's because everybody's looking for like a cheaper deal. All of these kind of third market airlines have been able to pop up.
Right.
So we have almost no standard of flying.
Welcome to Jet, huh?
Yeah, wait, sorry, JetBlue?
JetHeh.
JetHeh is an offshoot of JetBlue.
Yeah, it's cheaper.
Are we going to make it?
Well, that's a fee.
We've made it half the way, unless everybody pays.
They just
we are
start.
Crashing. Yeah, Bane just gets on the mic. We will crash this plane. Like everybody.
Well, we're passing around the baskets. We don't take cash.
It's a church. Yep. Church air.
Yep.
You're flying with Jesus. Jesus literally is the co-pilot.
Oh my God. Some church should get an airline. They would make a killing.
You absolutely. If they were the official airline of Jesus
the
Christ,
the official airline of Jesus and God.
Jesus is the co-pilot and Pontius is the pilot.
Welcome to Trinity Air. No Jews.
Unless one of you wants to become the Holy Ghost, you better keep paying. They scare you into it. It's a fear-based. It's the number one fear-based airline in the Northwest.
If God comes to claim you, not our
fault.
You know, it's actually pretty not bad airline just popping up the Pacific Northwest. Alaska Air is pretty great.
I just flew it to Seattle and
probably,
back.
Right?
Yeah, because it was a nonstop. And it was comfortable. It's ran very well.
Virgin used to fly direct to Portland, which I like to go to from time to time, and then they stopped. You have to change planes in San Francisco, which is their hub, but Alaska goes straight to Portland, and Alaska's really, really, really nice.
Well, that's the thing. If you can find your niche, like there's enough people that are flying from here up the coast, and it's a long enough flight that makes sense for them money wise. I feel like that's the one that should be the standard, because then I think I looked at some of the other options, and it was like maybe $100 cheaper, but the layover was like 7 hours.
Yeah.
You know, Alaska Airlines, how much is your time worth?
You know, I'll just pay the extra $200 and not be in an airport for most of the day.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that because my mother, I used to joke with her. She would fly out here to visit me, and she would be like, yeah, the flight was only $300. And I'm like, yeah, but why are you flying out on Tuesday and getting here Thursday? Like, she had, like, you know, an overnight layover in Denver, and, like, you know, she had all this stuff. And I was like, Mom, pretty soon you just need to – no layovers, whatever. That's my one thing.
Yeah.
I can't do layovers.
They're very – it's – when you have to do it a lot, it's very stressful to – because especially I feel like lately – it's questionable whether or not you'll make your layover.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Because you usually only get like an hour, 40 minutes to like an hour and a half, 2 hours to make your – so if you're even a little bit late, especially flying out of a hub like L.A., Chicago, Atlanta, New York, you may or may not make that connecting
and
flight.
And you're worried if your bags are going to make it. Like, at least I'm running, but yeah. I feel – and I don't – I know the guys that handle the bags. That's a very – that's such a weird job. That is actually you're a part of the U.S. Postal Service. You just don't know it. It's like, you know, but and we lose letters all the time. Like, to lose bags like that, if I'm running, there was a flight that I had to make when I was going overseas, and I flew out of Houston, and I was sprinting across the airport like a John Hughes movie, trying to make that flight. And the whole time I'm like, is my bag going to make it? And the spoiler alert, it didn't.
Of course.
And so I, you know, me getting there with all the urgency in the world. It's like the amount of time to get all those bags on the conveyor belt and like to have them move to the planes, like it just makes it so tough.
Well, I will not check a bag if there's any possible way that I can help it, because it just adds time when you get to the airport and they almost made me check my bag. I have a bag that's the perfect size. It is. I bought it because, like, this is the largest allowable suitcase.
Yes.
But when I was coming back from Montreal, there was a super snarky agent at the, like, going into security. I mean, like, super snarky. Like, the guy that – and, you know, in his defense, you're dealing with thousands of people a day.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that most of them are very annoying and are doing the kind of things like you're trying to bring your fucking rucksack, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, this bag, it looks like it should fit in the thing. And he was like, you got to put it in this thing to make sure it fits. And I'm like, okay. I mean, and then you get a little defensive because you're like, well, I'm not a moron. Like, I travel. But of course, he deals with a lot of morons. And so he doesn't have information on you. But I start, you know, I start sliding it into the little thing, and I dropped it so it kind of went in head first. And without even missing a beat, he goes, that's not how it fits in. And I go, I dropped it.
And then he quickly The story's not over.
And then he started snarking at the other guy who was laughing at me because I was like, I know. I'm trying to get it in there. And he turned out to have been awful.
Well, you know how, because it usually goes is when I just got back from China, when we were taking off, like, I remember we were at the gate and somehow this woman had gotten through this bag to that point in the security. When I say this bag, it was like the size of this table. And like this, they were like, you have to see if it can fit in there. And clearly it didn't. But the woman like went, you know what, A plus for commitment on her part, because she went over there as if it was going to fit in there. And it couldn't even like rest on top. Like, you know how like an ice cream on top of a cone?
Right.
That's what it looked like.
Yep.
And it was like, it was a Cinderella evil stepsister trying to shove that foot in that shoe. There was no way that was her shoe. And like she couldn't get it in, and they were like, and it was like this woman like just keeps stuff sacking it in, but it had like a skeleton of the suitcase that wasn't bending.
Right.
It wasn't like she was stuffing, like it wasn't a sleeping bag that she was trying to cram into a space, and it just annoyed the heck out of her. And she kept like being like, no, the shoe fits. Let me just try it from this angle. And everyone was like, there's no way. You need to get your eyes. I think you have cataracts.
You don't understand how space works.
Yeah. She had no idea. I'll never forget. It was like a purplish pink bag that just, it was, and I feel like you have to do that though. You have to say, let's see if it'll fit.
Sure.
So that you can give them the opportunity to fail themselves instead of making the decision that they've already failed. And that was like one of the weirdest things, because she wouldn't let it go.
I do, you know, I feel like the TSA people get a lot of shit, but I also feel like having to deal with the types of people that they have to deal with all day, I wouldn't be able to do it. I would snap on people so hard within hour one. I'm like, just shut the fuck up and put your suitcase on. Like, there's no,
you're right.
Everyone's got a story. You know, I've done it too. Everyone's like, well, I know, but I'm not like everybody. Yes, we are. We're
but also
like everybody
you're
else.
Super protective of your personal shit.
Yes.
When I was flying back from somewhere, they made everybody open their suitcases, and it was like, people at the DMV were those TSA agents.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually had like a side table where they would split it up into two conveyor belts. And like every third one, they would just like randomly search a bag. And then they'd have to go over there like it was like, you know, when they're like return, well, not, I don't personally know this, but you know, when they like return things to you after you get out of prison.
Yeah.
Like one pack of gum, one pack of marble. That's what they were doing. They were opening up people's suitcases and they were just like taking shit out. And they were going through. And the thing is, like, I don't think anybody had, you know, it wasn't just like, how did those 40 dildos get in there?
Right.
But it was like, you just don't, like, I don't want my stuff out in the stuff in the open. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's
you just don't want that. And then you're, like, super protective. I don't know where your hands have been. They've been all over everybody's stuff. And so they're just, like, cramming
they're
it
just
in.
Cross-pollinating all these germs from all over the world.
Yeah, you know I have
gonna
to
be,
burn
it's gonna
this.
It's going to be fucking 12 monkeys.
You're so right. I'm like, by the way, you can keep my suitcase and just put it in that oven.
Just burn it.
Yeah, it doesn't. And I'm glad we both realized I'm not a terrorist and now I don't want this shit anymore. But it's, I have a really long beard, it, like on the summer, I just like take a vacay my buddy and I joke that we're in terrorist mode because we just let it grow. And if I get tan, guarantee I have been stopped at a train station by authorities. Like my buddy and I, and we get stopped so much, it's like a tracking shot from an Aaron Sorkin show. We just keep our conversation going while they're interrogating us.
Officer, I'm on Two Broke Girls. No, that guy's Ukrainian.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ukrainian terrorist. That's Chechnyan. I don't think you know how the world works. But we came back from Paris to London on the Eurostar. And I remember like everybody was going and we were stopped. My friend is Syrian. Super pale, looks Scottish. He has like a huge red, kind of like WWE or WWF 80s wrestling mustache.
Yep.
Just like the biggest, but in, and his passport is American, but like, I don't know if his last name, like, is it, maybe it's just rings a bell or something.
It's Terrorista.
Yeah. Hilarious. The Bomb. Why do you have a middle name? Your nickname, The Bomb, is on your name?
Why is that weird?
Freddie the Bomb Sarkis?
Yeah. I'm a wrestler and a terrorist. What's the problem?
It's just him holding up a bomb in his passport photo. They didn't even ask for your photo. You handed them a headshot?
A bomb is your passport photo?
Oh, bomb.
Well, yeah, but an old-timey cartoon one.
It's his face on a clock. Oh, that doesn't make – why would you do that?
I don't understand.
You are killing us.
I do that.
And we're walking through and we are literally like they put our bags on the conveyor belt and it's going through and we're literally just keeping like, so yeah, when we get back to here, just make sure that we, and they are like looking through our bags and everything. And we never lose eye contact as the camera just keeps going to the fluid shot, the old Scorsese to the kitchen. And then we just grab our bags and go because we know when the two of us are together, we know that we're going to get stopped 100%. And it's like there's nothing you can do about it. And you just are kind of like, you know what? Just add time to your time at the airport. But now at the train station.
Yeah.
Which that I think surprised us both. Because but whatever. I mean, you know, you have to know.
I mean, I always hate when my luggage gets flagged for something. It got flagged in Montreal because I have a little Bluetooth speaker and there were some wires in one of the pockets. And so they pull it out. But I also appreciate like, good, go through bags. Make sure these are okay. At least I know you're doing stuff. I appreciate this.
I've gotten things on airplanes that I didn't know was in my bag, and I thought that was weird. that I was like, oh my God, for all the times you could have stopped me, you didn't stop me for this.
Like the surface-to-air missile that you got on
Yeah,
there.
Well, I have a missile-shaped bag. It's just a missile. I would do that. I just want to have a missile with a handle.
Yeah.
Guys, this is TSA approved. Trust me.
It fits.
It says I love America on it.
but America's spelled wrong.
I was just going to say A-M-U-R. It's Umeriku. It's brought to you by Cleveland Clunes.
The other side says Explosivo on it, though. What does that mean?
Is there liquid in here? Yeah, it's the fuel.
Sorry, I
feel like you're not getting me.
Yeah, what's the problem? It fit in the thing.
Oh, God.
Fucking dicks.
That's what it is. It's got to be. It's like, no, this is my carry-on. You know that like some hip like Alexander McQueen is going to have little bomb-shaped bags.
No.
That's the one thing people will not F with. They just won't. But that's like, but it's true. Like the stuff they'll flag, and it is. My father has a beard down to his mid stomach, and he's always had that. And he's on my father's side, we're Georgian and Romanian, and it's like, and I for him, he doesn't fly all that often, but he's got to be super careful going through there because he sure. just his type, you know, like you know. When they have like pictures up of like don't let these people on the lot or something,
right?
Like my father looks like red flag, like just like the archetype for guy. We got to check your beard because you know that was like a thing like recently in prisons. They were talking about could people sneak things in their beard, and my friend was working on a case in Seattle as an attorney, and then she was like no, and then she's like and then I remember your father. And then I remember you might be able to do that.
You could sneak something in your
the
beard.
The old, like, file. The beard is the new birthday cake. Sorry, sir. We got to check your facial hair.
That seems to be it. But why would he shave his beard into the shape of a file? I mean, that's a very bad choice.
That's Pais. That's a hipster Jew. Come on.
I'm sorry.
Hipster Jews.
I mean, come on.
But he does. He has, like, a very big... I mean, you know, that's the thing. They check bags. I want to know in America what are the specific things that they check. Because I feel like in other countries, I don't know. I don't fly them enough to know. But there's certain criteria where I feel like they just look at something and they're just like, you're flagged. You're flagged. And it doesn't – I mean, I know that it's supposed to be random. You guys can't see it, but it looks like a Decepticon.
That's one of the Constructicons out there building a new base.
Fun, man. Yeah.
Or it's that guy like, oh, is this making noise?
he's trying to get in another way by breaking down the wall.
He thinks the podcast is that bulldozer.
Guys, we're in here waiting.
That's a bulldozer.
You're talking into the giant shovel.
That's not.
Is this thing on? Stop tap.
This doesn't record or amplify anything.
That guy's like an old man who refuses to get glasses. He's like, Dad, you need glasses. No, I'm good.
He was like 29 years old, though. You'd think he would know.
He's talking to a bulldozer.
I wonder if when Diablo Cody does come in, we start doing the podcast, we'll just be halfway through and he's like, so when are you guys gonna start? Like, okay, yeah. Well, this is part of the
guys, where do I put my luggage? what is that guy
bomb shaped luggage? What is
that's what's in there? He's got the food bags inside there is bomb shaped luggage. This podcast brought to you by bomb shaped luggage. Rocket fuel bomb shaped luggage.
the luggage that says you will never fly again.
Yeah, the guarantee to put you on the no-fly list forever.
100%. Well, I don't ever want to do anything that jeopardizes my TSA pre-check status.
Dude, because once that goes away, you can't. It's too hard to get it back.
It's hard to go, and it's hard to go back to just like waiting in line at the airport. And you know, if I only had to do it every once in a while, it wouldn't be that big of a deal, but I travel almost every weekend.
That's how it was for me over the summer, and I realized like there's things that I never disliked that I could have taken in small quantities, but yeah, when you have to do them every single weekend, you're like, how do I get this out of my life? Like the simplest thing, and that was the line was the biggest thing. Because you always, everybody always has one guy, you know, like when you're in LA and you see like the traffic's going, you never hope that someone is hurt, but you're like, I hope there's an accident.
And it's not just people
and not right.
Looking at a parked motorcycle
exactly.
On the side of the road.
Or checking out a Bugatti.
Yeah.
Hey mom, that's the rap song. And so but that's the thing about the TA or the airport, you know, there's no accident. There's not like man in a wheelchair down. You know that it's just somebody who's never flown before.
Right.
Who's carrying a camelback full of water.
You can't bring this.
It's
Why
just
are you?
Lawrence of Arabia traveling on Southwest, and everything is just a sack of water.
Now you're shitting on the floor. Where
Why?
Are you?
But I have to say, the TSA people have been some of the coolest people that I've met, because they tend to be the ones that are like, oh, I love the tack of the show. Like, they're the ones that watch G4, play video games. They recognize the symbol on my Thundercats messenger bag. Like, I get more – I feel like the TSA people that have talked – there's more nerd cred in the TSA that I've seen.
I don't blame TSA people ever. I think it's like the one guy who's not aware of who woke up from a coma that he got – like it's Captain America. He went into a coma in the late 30s, early 40s and doesn't understand how the plane works. Like right. Even a young person who's like never seen a flight movie, never like has seen an airplane in the air and wondered what a big silver bird was. And then – because I
what are those, air whales?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm going to fly air whale. That seems like the worst. Like you take the thing that will never fly. Ostrich Airlines.
It's not going to – it can't.
That feels like we're crashing head first.
They can't go backwards at least.
That's right. Well – that would be good, though.
What, a backwards walking ostrich?
Well, yeah. No, a backwards plane.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Well, I feel like – because you only have one option. So the problem is I feel like if you go into a storm, like you already are in it. You're going that direction.
Yeah.
But if a plane – that's the kind of the cool thing about a helicopter. If it could kind of – a plane could go like beep, yeah. beep, beep yep. and back up and back like up. Avoid it.
Beep, just to let all the birds.
The other planes
the
behind
other planes
it.
Know
Check
behind
your
you.
Rear view mirror. Does this plane not see that I'm trying to back up? Come on, man.
I got a rear camera here, but I still can't see the sides. So
did you see – I saw the Vacation movie. Did you see that?
But you saw Vacation?
Yeah.
With Ed's movie?
I thought it was great. I thought it was super funny.
I think the trailer looks great.
There's a thing though with the truck or the car they drive that has two mirrors, so and they face each other. So you can only see your face in the mirrors.
That's really funny.
But that's like I feel like those would be on a plane. You're like, I can see the back wing.
Well, we have to wrap this up because there's Diablo Cody is here next, and
food's getting cold.
The food is getting his luggage is getting cold.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's going to be very confused about, you know, when we start talking into these pillows. So
these giant dildos,
these
Muppet dildos.
They are total Muppet dildos. This was in Sweetum's, so far inside Sweetum's butt.
You know,
actually, who I think would be the biggest dildo freak of all the Muppets. And it's not someone that you would normally think about. And I tell you, you're going to go, Sam the Eagle. I feel like Sam the Eagle would be
Well, that's what that face is.
Yep.
He has that face like he's sitting on one right now. Yeah, all the ones that you think are not like Elmo.
No. It's Sam.
That's an Elmo, though, what you're talking into.
Right. I'm talking to Elmo right now. It's red and bulbous and spongy.
If Sesame Street or Muppets were NBA players, I'm just like, what's up, guys? How are you?
Hey, what's happening?
Kermit Dong.
But
thank you so much for having me.
Two Broke Girls. It comes back when?
It comes back. I don't know that we have a start date. I don't know what the fall schedule is yet. But we go back, and it's probably going to be sometime in October or November.
Okay.
Yeah, but
no, probably September. I would think. No, August.
It starts later now.
What? It's starting back in 2016.
Is that true? Well, she knows more than I do.
I think she said CVS.
CVS.
Yeah,
there was an old guy
pharmacy.
Who was getting his blood pressure taken.
Two Broke Girls comes back in 2016. Where am I?
It's just an oracle.
The oracle of CVS. Yeah.
It's just, I'm like, geez. He's trying to talk to me about spoons.
The earth will undergo a period of great darkness, and Two Broke Girls will be back in January.
2016.
Is that last part?
The darkness I'm not really concerned about.
It's fine. When's my show
I'm
back?
Not on the darkness. I am on Two Broke Girls on CBS. When is that? What's going on with that? The nothing is coming. The nothing is coming until 2016.
Oh, they look like good, strong hands.
Oh, I love that. I love that you knew that.
So good. Jonathan Kite, I'm so glad we were able to make this happen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people find you on social media?
At JB Kite. K-I-T-E. At JB Kite.
Come back on at midnight soon. Please.
I would love that. We had a great time. Thank you so much for having us there.
Of course. And that's it. Enjoy your burrito, which is enjoy your luggage.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.